are listening to a free version of The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, February 5th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live just steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, following what is a huge, huge announcement, frankly, on the future of net neutrality and Title II classification. Tim Carr, Senior Director of Strategy from Free Press, will be here with us. This is one of those things that is... I actually, tried to sit down with my daughter and explain to her why this was such a big deal, and I realized, wow. Wow, am I out of touch with what interests a nine-year-old. But it really will have huge impact if it goes the way it should. We will talk about that also on the program today. CIA whistleblower, the only person to go to prison because of torture was John Kiriakou, who was the person who blew the whistle on the CIA program of torture. Also on the program today, folks, if I am been coming across as a little emasculated over the past several months, apparently Fox News has figured out why, because of my exposure to the movie Frozen. And just because of who I am. Brian Williams, ladies and gentlemen. Apparently, here's the rule. When you're going to make up a story about your exploits in war, you shouldn't just keep repeating it over and over again on social media. Because eventually somebody's going to say, hey, look, I'm tired of you saying this story. That's not true. And then you're going to have to concede that you made a mistake and it's not true. We will discuss that and more. I'm very excited about this. I mean, it is – I don't know that there can be a more dry topic that is going to have more profound implications – years down the road. We'll talk to Tim Carr about this, but when you think of things like the Telecommunications Act in 1996 and how that has fundamentally altered our media environment over the past now almost 20 years, this, if net neutrality is codified, in other words, if there is no statutory... We need to know, obviously, the details of this reclassification plan, but nevertheless, and we need to know that it's not going to be reversed by statute in Congress. But assuming that, this is going to have implications for really for decades in terms of the direction in which our media moves. So a very exciting day. And also the culmination of the way this stuff is supposed to work, right? Where you've had successful lobbying from the ground up, and there was an inside-outside game here too. But before we get to Tim Carr, I had said a couple of days ago that it was only a matter of time before the right-wingers realized, like, oh, it's irresponsible for us to make political hay out of anti-vaccinations and measles. And you saw what happened to Chris Christie and Rand Paul. They basically were thrown under the bus, as the right-wingers like to say, by their fellow right-wingers, because it's an incredibly irresponsible position to take, particularly as a politician, I think, to get out there and claim that, you know, vaccinations, take them or leave them type of situation. So it was only a matter of time before, and I said this, was it Monday, that the right-winger said, well, the real problem, of course, is the brown people. That's where this measles comes from. And Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks the other day was, as far as we can tell, the first out of the gate with this. Now we're starting to see it everywhere. But here is Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks on the Matt Murphy show explaining how really, I hate to say this, but it really, it's the little brown ones.
The liberal press is trying to make hay with this story concerning an outbreak of measles, and we have had a significant uptick in 2014. Do you believe there's a correlation between the number of individuals coming into the country unvaccinated for the measles and the number of cases that we've seen across the United States?
I don't think there is any healthcare professional who has examined the facts who could honestly say that Americans have not died because the disease is brought into America by illegal aliens who are not properly healthcare screened as lawful immigrants are. It might be the enterovirus that has a heavy presence in Central and South America that has caused deaths of American children over the past 6 to 9 months.
So, I mean, look, you saw what Mo Brooks just did, right? No, he's basically saying he just changed the topic. Now it's the retrovirus. I don't know that we're vaccinated against the retrovirus. I'm not, to my knowledge. But he's changed the topic because he's on the radio show and he doesn't want to say, Matt, I'm not going there. But so he's changed the topic. But continue.
It might be this measles outbreak. There are any number of things. We in America have to understand that we truly are blessed with the best health care in the world. We are also blessed with the wealth necessary to properly raise kids and give them things that aren't given in other parts of the world. And unfortunately, our kids just aren't prepared for a lot of the diseases that come in and are borne by illegal aliens. Now, you know, you have to have sympathy for the plight of the illegal aliens. I think we all understand that. But they have not been blessed with, in their home countries, with the kind of health care, the kind of immunizations that we demand of our children in the United States. For example, if you're an American-born child, you have to go through, generally speaking, you have to have certain kinds of immunizations before you can even get into school. Well, that requirement, to some degree, is suspended for illegal alien children.
Speaking of that,
exposes America.
I don't even know what that means, suspended for illegal immigrant children. No, you go to school, you got to show your immunizations. Even if you're an undocumented immigrant or the child of an undocumented immigrant, when you show up at school, you still need to show your immunizations. You need to show your card.
That exposes American children to diseases they otherwise would not have been exposed to. Again, you've got to have sympathy for the illegal alien child that is burdened with this disease, but you also have to do what you can to protect American kids from the suffering and sometimes death associated with this disease.
Yeah, I don't even know what disease he's talking about there. This guy's parsing so much. But here's the reality. The immunization rate amongst children, particularly, I think it's Nicaragua and Guatemala, is somewhere around 93%. The immunization rate, I think, in this country is somewhere around 92% for children. But you got to feel sympathy for the little of those kids there, because they actually, their system, they've learned not to get measles. And they come across here and they give us all measles. No, the reality is you have people both on the left and the right. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any ideological lines on why they don't get immunization for their children.
Let me also just add that very awkward with that guy at family gatherings, Mo Brooks.
Oh, yes, Michael. Very, that must be very difficult for you. Yes. I can only imagine.
Mo Brooks, more problems.
All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Tim Carr about the announcement of from FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler that we will have net neutrality. We'll be right back. Oh, folks, I want to remind you that the Majority Report is being sponsored today by Igloo. I've talked about it before. Igloo is an intranet you're going to actually like. It's a cloud platform that can help you do your best work. You can share files, blog updates, coordinate calendars, and manage projects. We're going to try it here, despite the fact that Michael and Matt can't seem to even figure out essentially how to use the key to open up the door in this this office. It's easy to use, easy to configure, even for the most non-technical or what I call Michael-ish of users, which means that everything you can do at your desk, you can now do on the go on your phone. So whether you're a large enterprise stuck using SharePoint or a fast-growing business overwhelmed by apps, you can create an intranet that matches your brand's look and feel, simplifies how you work, and like I say, you can access it on your phone. Sign up now. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/majority. That's igloosoftware.com/majority. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Tim Carr, Senior Director of Strategy for Free Press.
Hey, Sam.
Tim, welcome to the program. This is pretty exciting.
Yeah, this is a big deal, and it's something that we've been working on for 10 years. And, you know, we've slowly moved the needle, and we slowly moved the needle further, and we finally got to a point where the Federal Communications Commission is actually doing the right thing with regard to net neutrality.
Yeah, all right. So yesterday, I guess it was, Tom Wheeler. Now, we know the president in, I guess it was mid-November, had come out and reiterated his desire for Title II classification. Tom Wheeler announced that he was going to pursue that yesterday in a post on, and there had been some hints to it over the past couple of weeks, but he was pretty explicit about it in a piece I think he wrote for Wired. Tell us what Title II classification means, and then we can talk about sort of the evolution. I mean, just tell us what that means.
Sure. So Title II is a section under the Communications Act that gives the Federal Communications Commission the authority to treat broadband access providers as what's called common carriers. And if you're a common carrier, that means that you have to connect your customers to the destination that they want to go. Common carriage in telephone services means that when you dial a number, so you want to dial up your your favorite pizza place down the street, your phone company has to connect you to your favorite pizza place. They can't reroute your call to Domino's. And it's a, it is a principle of two-way communications that protects users of those communications and allows them to really control their own experience. Now, when you transfer that to the internet, it means that we get to choose whatever websites that we want to go to. If we want to use YouTube, for example, to watch videos, or if we want to use some other streaming service, our internet access provider, Comcast, can't tell us what sites and services we have to use in order to watch videos online. So this protection makes sure that power over your internet experience resides with the internet users and not with these very powerful phone and cable companies.
And now, and we've talked about this on this program. You and I have spoken about it, and we've had multiple folks on over the past couple of years talking about this. And we should remind people that this is how the internet was originally classified. Isn't that the case that it was in 2003? I guess it was.
Yes.
Michael Powell reclassified it, and that changed the dynamic here.
Yes, Michael Powell was then the chairman of the FCC. Today, he is the president of the National Telecommunications Cable and Telecommunications Association. Which
imagine
is
that. Imagine
yes,
that.
Yes, the revolving door spun for Michael. He is now the top lobbyist. But when he was a public servant, in name only, I should say, he decided that he was going to give phone and cable companies a gift, and that gift was to change that classification, change that common carriage classification to another classification that basically gave them a great deal of rein to start tampering and interfering with our internet connections. And I think you mentioned earlier, this is how the internet was meant to be. What we're really doing here is trying to fix that mistake, fix Michael Powell's mistake, and make sure that our what we take for granted, our ability to go where we want on the internet without being blocked, becomes the rule of the road. We're really just trying to protect the status quo here, which has been really difficult. And I said it's taken us 10 years to get us to fix this problem.
And in fact, basically what happened was is that when President Obama had stated that this was a priority for him in 2008, there was a piece I read today in The Wall Street Journal that sort of detailed what was happening in the White House over those years on this issue. And he was convinced at that time, according to this piece by Larry Summers, to look, don't deal with this. We've got bigger fish to fry, et cetera, et cetera. And the idea was that the everybody assumed that the Commissioner Jankowski, Julius Jankowski, would have done the reclassification. And so people that understand, you've got this statutory framework that has been passed by Congress, and when the reclassification changed, you had in 2008 multiple attempts by the FCC to use their ability to impose regulations within that classification that was challenged multiple times in court, right? There were two court cases where the FCC failed in that respect. And
Obama's first chairman at the FCC, Julius Jankowski, was failed in that regard. He tried to structure a net neutrality protection using the old classification, and the courts have just said this: you can't do this. If you want to protect net neutrality, if you want to protect common carriage, you have to reclassify as Title II. Unfortunately, within the White House, there were other people whispering into the president's ear on this matter, one of whom was Larry Summers, who during the 2008 elections, the 2010 midterms, when a lot of this was happening, said, you know, this is too controversial. We don't want to have Comcast angry at the White House right now. Let's soften this rule. And of course, they went ahead with a rule that ultimately failed in the courts. So they're finally, even the White House has come around. And I think the midterm elections that happened in November of last year had something to do with it. I think Obama has, with that weight off his shoulders and without having to worry about getting reelected or pleasing, you know, certain powerful constituencies, he's finally come back to his original commitment as a candidate in 2007. He made a commitment to net neutrality. He's finally come full circle and told the FCC, well, really, if you want to protect Internet users, you have to use Title II. And that really changed the calculus within the FCC as well, which is why we are where we are today.
And according to this Wall Street Journal thing, Tom Wheeler, who it was a former lobbyist for the telecommunications industry, was sort of blindsided by President Obama coming up. Yeah,
He kind of came kicking and screaming to this issue, and it was because of the president, but it was also because there has been an extraordinary grassroots organizing effort around this issue. The FCC was flooded with 4 million comments when it started this proceeding in 2014. That's more people who ever commented on an issue before the FCC in its history. And so there's been this great organizing of Internet users who seem, by a large majority, to support this idea of net neutrality. So they became very engaged, which emboldened the president to come back and become very engaged. So there have been really sort of 4 million points of pressure that have gotten us to this point and convinced Chairman Wheeler that he really had no other option. We finally kind of put him into a box,
right,
from which there was only one door to escape. And after a while, I think he came to realize himself that this solution, Title II, wasn't such a bad thing after all.
I mean, it is fascinating to read his piece in Wired, and I want to go through that. But before we do, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about it, because the big highlight from my perspective on this is that this includes wireless, right? I mean, this includes mobile.
Yes.
There's no splitting. You know, there was a little bit of game playing. I don't know if this was in the decision a year or two or years ago or 3 years ago, where it was like, we're going to really clamp down on all the wired stuff. Well, you know, in 5 or 10 years, it's all going to be wireless anyways. But this is both.
Right. And, you know, ultimately, when you think about it, it shouldn't really matter how you get on the Internet, whether you're using a smartphone, a laptop computer, a desktop computer. That experience should be the same. And now, there were some technical limitations with wireless and in its capacity to stream data and things like that created that kind of issue, like, well, maybe we should treat these differently. But at the end of the day, your Internet experience, whether you get online via one device or the other, should be the same. You should have the ability to determine what you do, where you go, without your carrier trying to get in the way.
So in the piece that Tom Wheeler wrote in Wired, he talks about, they say at one point, my proposal, he writes, will modernize Title II, tailoring it for the 21st century. When I read stuff like that, I always get really nervous. He goes on to say, for example, there'll be no rate regulation, no tariffs, no last mile unbundling. What do those three things mean?
Well, one of the concerns about Title II is that it gives the agency a whole range of powers. Now, what the net neutrality advocacy community has only wanted is that we want a non-discrimination rule, which is one of those powers extended under Title II. But Title II also allows the FCC to determine rates, require universal service, and a lot of other things. And we've been very clear from the beginning, is like, we don't want to go there right now. We're just talking about net neutrality. So the agency has the power, somewhat legal term, to forbear. That means they can say, we're going to invoke Title II, but only these sections of Title II that allow us to protect net neutrality. Now, the industry's concern about being rate regulated or having a universal service requirement where, you know, they have to serve everybody, we're not going to address that right now. We're going to forbear from those. And that's what the FCC is – that's what that language means. It means that it's going just to focus on that aspect of the authority. It's going to forbear from the others. So the industry doesn't have to worry. You'll oftentimes hear this phrasing. They'll say, you know, Chairman Wheeler wants to turn the internet into a public utility. But in fact, the very narrow tailoring of the rule that the chairman has proposed doesn't have those aspects to it. It just looks at this issue of common carriage and non-discrimination.
Well, I can tell you Chairman Cedar wants to make it a public utility, but we're not there yet.
No, that's a very valid argument that we should be having. We should be talking about whether or not the internet is essential infrastructure for the 21st century. I happen to agree with you. I believe that it is. But in the sort of political climate that we're operating in right now, that makes the net, it just complicates the net neutrality
right.
argument. I think we need to go there. Absolutely.
Well,
at some point.
I mean, I think, you know, that's the future, right? I mean, that's, this in some ways, that fear that these large telecommunication companies have is founded because it's quite possible that, 5 years from now during the if it's the Clinton administration, we could be having this argument that, like, look, it's quite clear now that the rest of the world has moved way past us in terms of what they provide for all of their people, and we need to get on the ball here. But before we get to that part of the conversation, what is last mile unbundling? What does that mean?
Last mile unbundling is related to open access, where it allows numerous competitors to ride on the same infrastructure. I think if you're familiar with the early days of the internet, when we all had dial-up and we got our internet connection through our phone line, there was a requirement that numerous providers could offer service. So you would, in dial-up days, you could choose AOL as your internet provider.
But CompuServe,
you'd open
Earthlink,
the phone book and you'd see
right.
40 to 50 options there. And that's because the infrastructure that went into the wire that came into your house was open. It was unbundled so that numerous services could ride on that wire.
So in other words, I've got Time Warner puts the cable in my building, and I could actually buy internet service not just from Time Warner, but I could buy it from any
right.
number of companies that would have access to that last mile, as it were, or the coaxial in that building.
Right, and the cable companies have argued, since they spent all that money on getting that cable into your home, then, why should they then give over their lines to someone else? So that's, there are arguments for doing that, and I would be happy to also have that debate as well at some point. So but it's not a part of this order. And I think, obviously the chairman is playing politics to a degree here because he knows he has to convince a lot of people here. So he's very narrowly tailored this rule to protect net neutrality, prevent discrimination online. However, it's important that he is choosing Title II as the authority because it gives the agency the power to have those conversations in the future. If you take Title II away, you might as well make the FCC a non-entity because the internet is the future of communications for most people. We need an agency that's in place to protect the public interest. Title II classification is the most important policy within the Communications Act that allows the agency to do that.
It's basically the vehicle where all these things have potential in the future. Right?
It is a sound legal foundation that will stand up to court challenges. It's in the Communications Act. The Supreme Court had this argument in 2005.
That's the beauty about this, is that we don't.
And they said, yes, the FCC can do this. It has the ability to reclassify.
In fact, The Supreme Court not only said they had the ability to do this, the Supreme Court said, if you want to do this, that's what you should do, right? I mean, this is so much harder to challenge because the Supreme Court is basically, this was almost like directed by the court.
Yes, they did. And the interesting thing about that is that that was back when Chairman Powell, remember him, back when he reclassified from Title II to Title I. They said that, oh, yes, he can do that. But that same argument holds, and it's upheld by the Supreme Court, that this chairman can go from Title I back to Title II, which is what he's proposing to do. So that is the basis of our legal argument, and that is the reason that if Verizon were to choose the challenges in the courts, I'm pretty much guaranteed we'd win this one.
Okay. So I want to ask you about the likelihood of that. But first, before we do, so this is supposed to go for a vote on the 26th. We know that it is 3-2, Democrats versus Republicans on the FCC. We know that the other two FCC commissioners, if anything, have been leaning towards this reclassification more than Wheeler. So it is very likely that the vote's going to be 3-2 in favor of this proposal. Is that a fair?
Yes. And, you know, as a matter of this importance that the president has spoken out on, you're very, very unlikely that you're going to see the Democrat break rank here. There's a measure of confidence that that's the way the vote will go. However, we have 3 weeks between now and February 26th, and there is a very good chance, it's a certainty, that these people will be hearing from the phone and cable lobby. They are just cranking up their lobbying machinery, which is very effective. And the next 3 weeks are going to be a fight to try to make sure that those three votes hold and that there are no compromises written into the order, because there is a process of redrafting that goes on as well, so that we don't end up with something that stinks and doesn't give us the protections that Wheeler pledged to uphold in his Wired column.
Give me a sense of like what is that lobbying going to take place? I mean, all right. So according to this Wall Street Journal piece, just so I can catch people up here, what happened was there are two guys in the White House who, in the absence of other voices, were basically able to work the inside game. Promoted this. There were people outside the administration. There were, owners of Etsy and of Tumblr who were also, you know, doing some fundraising and had the opportunity to talk to Obama. And that even when they started getting whispers of this, some of the major cable providers tried to get through to Valerie Jarrett and influence it. So what are they going to do over the next 3 weeks? I mean, are they basically going to call up these commissioners and say, gosh, man, your future, it's all in front of you if you really want it? I mean, what do they do?
They are going to exert all forms of pressure. And it is that kind of direct lobbying where they will be visiting the offices. They will be visiting the White House. They will be visiting the commissioners at the FCC. They will be visiting members of Congress, of course, because they're trying also to
pass that's the other thing,
in Congress that would take this away. But they also do other things. They spend a lot of money on PR campaigns. You'll be seeing ads. If you're in Washington, D.C., and you turn on your TV, I'm fairly certain you'll be seeing ads that calls, you know, Title II, the end of the universe. And they'll be placing ads in print. They hire PR groups to do like social media campaigns, to write op-eds for newspapers. They've been very effective in organizing a lot of the more established civil rights community to not support Title II, which has been a real struggle for net neutrality advocates. So they'll be doing all sorts of tactics. They create front groups with kind of, you know, friendly sounding names. There was a group called Onward Internet that was advocating for light touch rules that was funded by NCTA. So it's going to be a really interesting time. And we're happy about the Wired piece. We're happy about the current position of the chairman. But we have to keep our champagne on ice. We're not ready to pop the corks yet because they are going to come at us with full force.
When can you pop the champagne? Is it on the 27th after the vote, or then are you worried at that point that Congress will create some statute that says we're changing the Telecommunications Act, or we're changing Title II classification, and we've put it on a bill to fund cancer treatment for everybody in America or whatever it is, and it's you can't veto this, President Obama, because you'll be vetoing cancer treatment. I mean, when can you pop the champagne?
Well, if the commitment to Title II holds on February 26th and we get a majority vote at the FCC, we will be popping our corks and we will be celebrating. But it will then transition from the FCC to Congress, where they will have those sorts of attempts to say to rewrite the rules. I got my hands on a talking point document that the cable industry is circulating in Capitol Hill, and it's all about giving Congress the power to rewrite the Communications Act and take Title II off the table.
Mm.
They're not going to get those types of laws passed before the 26th, I'm very confident. But after this decision is made at the FCC, we are going then to need to shift over to Congress. And it's not just congressional Republicans who have taken a stand against net neutrality. There are a number of Democrats who are receive a considerable sum of money in the form of campaign contributions that are on the fence on this issue. So we'll be fighting in Congress to try to kill any legislation that takes away our rights to choose where we want to go online. You know, there's a 2016 general election upcoming. It's possible that this issue could become an issue during the election, so there'll be a lot of work on the electoral side to make sure that we have net neutrality champions who are running for Congress and running for other offices that support our position as well. So this, you know, this is not going away. We
right.
can drink our champagne. We'll have a good night of it, but we'll get up the next morning and we'll just have to keep fighting. This is the way these policies, these sorts of policy battles go. But all signs right now are good. It's remarkable how far we've moved this issue. Even since, you know, January of last year.
It really is. I mean, and there's been an amazing out. I mean, when you look at you look at everything that your group has done and demand progress and then people who got to, you know, John Oliver's show, like that was huge. You can't underestimate the implications of them crashing the servers at FCC with the comments that were there. And then things like, you know, also it helps to have major online companies behind you on some, you know, with some degree of enthusiasm, you know, ranging. But let me ask you this. So you're the strategist for free, the senior director of strategy for Free Press. You got 3 weeks, right? You want to make sure that at the very least. I mean, the political process is very different. The legislative process, very different set of dynamics there. But at the very least, you want to make sure that nothing's changes between now and the 26th. What do you do? Do you guys sit around and say, all right, what we got to do is we got to put people outside of the FCC to note every time somebody comes in there with a briefcase or a nice suit and who's going to be offering jobs? Or, I mean, what do you, you know, we're going to put people on with video cameras. I mean, what do you do?
Well, we do a lot of those sorts of things. I mean, right now, Free Press is working with Demand Progress and Fight for the Future. We have a website out there called battleforthenet.com, which allows you to track your members of Congress on this issue. In fact, we created an individual web page for every member of Congress, all 535, that tracks their stance on this issue, that lets people call their member of Congress and say, hey, I visited your web page and your record's not so good. You need to support Title II. You need to support net neutrality. So we're keeping pressure on Congress. We're being very vigilant about the FCC and what they're doing, who they're talking to. You're going to see a lot of op-eds from the cable industry in newspapers in Washington and across the country that trot out a lot of their tired talking points. So, you know, we do opposition research. We look at what the cable lobbyists are doing, and we debunk them whenever they come out with an op-ed. We tear it down, and we show how it's wrong. And I can tell you they've consistently got their facts wrong on this issue. So this is a full-on campaign where you're working both sides of the aisle. You're working both the House and the Senate. You're working the FCC. You're looking at what the media is doing. You're trying to make sure that you have an opportunity to counter a lot of the op-eds that are going to appear from the cable industry and also write your own and continue to explain to the American public why this issue should be, you know, top of the list for them.
My sense is that it's very unlikely we're going to see any major, you know, like really intense If the vote goes down the way that we hope it will, and then there isn't a successful challenge or reversal, legislatively, I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see a lot of court cases. Although it's who knows with that, you know, I mean, particularly now that you have that that first district in Washington court, the first circuit court, with a majority of Democrats saying essentially. Or Democratic appointees who will not question the authority of the FCC to do this. I mean, because I wouldn't put it past it, but that the cable carriers or the internet providers are basically going to just adapt and start to plan for this new environment. It is so exciting that you know, this is going to be a moment where 25 years ago you're going to be able to trace new developments in what in the way that we're connected and in technologies to this fight. I mean, it really is exciting, and I would imagine it's incredibly exciting to you.
Yes, it is very. I mean, you know, we're very happy. It's been a long, hard fight, and we are very pleased with where we are. And one of the things you mentioned, how the industry will adapt to this. It was interesting that the day that the Wired piece came out where, you know, the chairman basically said, this is what I'm going to do. If you looked at all of the cable stocks out there, they all went up. So the marketplace didn't seem to be too bothered by this. They didn't think that, you know, these types of rules would anyway in any way make the value of these companies go down. And Title II, this rule has been effectively imposed on other parts of the economy where companies are immensely profitable.
Right.
So this doesn't mean, you know, there are a lot of fear mongering out there that this will turn Comcast into a public utility where it's slow and, you know, bureaucratic.
Right. As opposed to the alacrity in which they use, they operate now.
Exactly. And none of that has proven to be true. The industry will adapt. It will continue to
it
be
gives
very
them certainty.
Successful.
Isn't that we've
and,
heard
and
forever?
We will
that,
have the protections we need.
Right. It gives them certainty. That you know, isn't always the problem, uncertainty? Well, now they have regulatory certainty if we get this. They know where we're going. Well, Tim, this is let me just, you know, congratulate you. You folks have been working on this for years and years. And for a long time, there's been a feeling like this is just a fight that could not be won. And just, you know, congratulations to you, but congratulations to all of us, because it really is exciting to just be at a time where you're going to impact this communications for, I mean, years and years and I mean, decades. This is going to make a big difference.
Well, thank you, Sam. I mean, this is really a victory for the internet public, and I think it's become more and more evident that we are now a political constituency that you can't ignore. Any time we see legislation that tries to impose on our rights to connect and communicate, we will rise up and be heard, and this is important not only for net neutrality but for all of the issues related to free speech and communications that we care about.
All right, Tim. Well, again, thanks so much for your time today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sam.
Boop, boop. There you go, folks. It really is. It's exciting both in terms of what the implications of this are going to mean in the future and the future that we averted, which I think would have been, bad.
It really just makes it seem like, especially being in the business that we're in and starting in it, that, okay, this can actually, like, you know, go on. It's not going to be like cable.
Like, right. I mean,
it's just, it's, you know.
The bar to entry is not going to be
very personal if you're in this business, on some level.
Yes. I mean, but I also just think that, like, we don't know. You know, you're comparing these sort of counterfactuals. What would the future have looked like under scenario A and versus scenario B? The future looks brighter because of this on some level. And also, it's also exciting to see that it can work. In other words, that even though you're aligned against these type of forces, that there are forces, you know, and this is with the sort of the asterisk that, like, look, this was also an intra-industry fight. Wasn't just about people power versus that, but so it's exciting.
I mean, I when you have the people behind one of those, you know, when you have those intra-working systems going on and these businesses going at it, but then you have the people so strongly on one side, I mean, it doesn't hurt.
Well, no,
all,
of course,
like,
not.
Of course not.
But we'll see. We shall see. With
As
all
we
of
always
that said,
say at the Majority Report, the people don't really matter that much.
Right. But I will say this you know, Comcast or whatever. I am willing for a significant, I mean, it would have to be fairly significant, sizable check to write an op-ed saying, like, I don't know how this is going to work out. I mean, if this is, if they're just going to shower cash everywhere over the next 3 weeks, I will do like a couple hundred words on, like, net neutrality. What does that mean?
I actually already have an outline piece called "You Might Be Surprised Why This Progressive Independent Podcaster Opposes the Government Grab of the Internet." It's perfect branding. I'm available.
This is like the ACA of the internet, I think is what Ted Cruz said, right? This is the Obamacare of the internet.
I mean, look, I'm someone who supports government intervention in the public good in many areas of life, and I work in independent media, but you might be surprised that I'm not too happy about what the FCC is doing with these latest classifications.
It is sort of surprising they don't have, like, an upworthy for, you know, they have, like, a click hole.
Yes.
It's too, you would imagine that, like, you know, the Chamber of Commerce would have their own upworthy that would just be like, you know, you should think twice about you subscribe, you know, I don't know.
This little girl was concerned about pesticides in her local school, and then she read this.
Exactly. Exactly.
This mom didn't want Coca-Cola sponsoring her kids' textbooks. What happened next will blow your mind.
That's
and
right.
Warm your heart.
You'll never believe why you'd like to pay more for that website.
For many years, people thought corn syrup was just a concentration of bad stuff. And then they saw this. I don't know. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to head into the fun half of the program, ladies and gentlemen. And it's going to be super fun today. What do we have?
We got a lot of sound.
We got a lot of sound. You're not going to believe what's happening with this whole Frozen thing. It is...
Makes me understand you a lot more.
They cracked the code.
Makes me understand you a lot more.
They cracked the code. People should read this. Let's put this a link to this Wall Street Journal piece. Oh, here. Here's a little tip, too. I know.
Over the place.
What's that? Well, the Wall Street Journal piece really sort of outlines, and I think after the election, the vote, we'll get Marvin Amori back on the program. He is a lawyer who is heavily involved in this. And the last time we talked to him, I think it was like over a year ago. It was after the Verizon court case. And he was like, this is bad news. He plays a prominent role in where we are today. And he's a very intelligent guy, and we should maybe have him on at the end of the month. But we will link to this Wall Street Journal piece. And here's the thing, folks. With the Wall Street Journal, they have a paywall, right? Here's a dirty little secret. I'm just going to share it with you guys. And I'm covering my mouth so that it's not something that you can see my lips moving. But what you do is you copy the headline from the Wall Street Journal, and then you search it on Google, and then you click it, and that's the way you get around the paywall. We all knew that once there was net neutrality, this type of stuff would happen. Cats and dogs. Firewalls falling down. So there you have it. We will link to that piece, because it really is an interesting on the inside game as opposed to the outside game, which we participated in.
Is there
in
ever going to be a story that comes out about a major policy area where there isn't some section of it that involves? And then Larry Summers came along and said exactly the wrong thing and messed everything up a
right.
little bit.
But for Larry Summers, this would have happened a long time ago, right?
Like, even in net neutrality, I didn't expect him to pop up. He's just like, girls shouldn't learn science. And by the way, don't worry about net neutrality right now.
Right. Stimulus.
Let me get back to my main focus of protecting the financial industry. But if I could just pipe in, I also would like to put in a word for the telecoms.
And, he shows up in Keystone. It's like the Zelig.
It's like a really bad policy.
Okay, so we're going to head into the fun half of the program. The number is 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Folks, we rely on your support to do this program on a daily basis. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Our Amazon link. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link. At MajorityReportKickback.com. MajorityReportKickback.com. Head there, click on the Amazon link, bookmark it, buy all your crap from there. We get a kickback. That's why we call it MajorityReportKickback.com. Folks, tomorrow on the program, we're going deep, deep into the Rolodex. Chris Rosen will be joining us to give us a preview of Oscars. Yes. And if you're a recent...
Oscars?
When are they? I think they're in a couple weeks. If you're not a longtime listener, it is going to be such a treat to have Chris Rosen here. All right, folks. We'll be right back.